Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
If you are kicking off your spring break, we brought a teacher to remind you why you're so happy those kids are all home today, this week.
Or is she so excited?
Or she's so excited.
To have the kids back in your house.
maybe. But we're also glad that you're joining via KMUN, or if you're listening to us on a podcast, you can listen both on Spotify and Apple Podcasts now, which is pretty exciting. I'm excited about it.
Apparently you are.
I am. Yeah, that's new. That's new. And you can binge listen, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because I've learned that people that do like podcasts, they like to just press play and then just keep going. So Apple and Spotify make that very easy.
But if they do that, have we grown as characters? Have our characters learned anything over the course of this?
No. You're still Mac Burns. And yes, and I'm here to keep you straight.
See, though, I think that the other thing I was going to say is if you do want to binge listen, there is never too much Mac or Alana.
Nope, there's not. And sometimes it's just us and sometimes we have a guest. And we do have a guest tonight. We have Julie Hackett here with Laughing Rabbit Farm. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Now say the name of the farm just a little bit slower.
Laughing Rabbit Farm.
That's it.
There's so much to unpack there. We're going to get to it.
There is, but you'll also find out why my five-year-old was disappointed in the name.
Oh.
There's your deep tease. But first,
I'm already a little disappointed.
I know.
Yeah. If the five-year-old's not excited, then I don't think I'm going to be excited.
I know. We might be heartbreakers.
But I have a new word.
All right. What's your word?
Okay, this is a historic word. Word that's no longer used, but could be used in a preschool. Dipsy doodle.
Dipsy doodle.
Yep.
Okay, and I always guess first. You can appear far smarter than I am.
And it's a verb.
A verb.
Yeah, an action
word. So don't dipsy doodle along as you're doing your homework. Probably not the right context, but I'm going to say dipsy doodle is to not take something seriously.
Well, close.
To like diddle daddle, you know.
Yeah. To dipsy doodle. Any guesses?
Dipsy doodle. It just sounds like something that would just roll off the tongue. It's like, oh, dipsy doodle.
Yep.
I think I'm going to try and use it, but I have no idea.
Like, oops. It's to deceive or con. We've been dipsy doodled. And I am going to introduce it to Kaya because I think she would use this one.
I like it.
Right? Yeah.
I wasn't serious. I was just dipsy doodling you.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
That's a good one. Okay.
I didn't really eat the 12 cookies.
Right.
I was dipsy doodling.
Yeah. You're dipsy doodling me.
Yeah. All right. So you ready for the history highlights?
I am.
I don't have a bunch. Okay. March 24th. These are things that happen tomorrow.
Yep.
1765. Britain enacts the Quartering Act, requiring colonists to provide temporary housing to British soldiers.
Right, yes.
And that leads directly to my favorite amendment, the Third Amendment. No quartering of troops.
Right, yeah.
You know, some people like the, you know, that freedom of speech thing, and some people like
the gun
thing. But I always, when people ask me, I always say Third Amendment, just because they look at me strangely.
They're like, which one is that?
Do you want 20 soldiers to move into your house?
Do you want one?
And you have to feed them?
Right. So, yes. Yeah.
Third Amendment, go. Third Amendment. But 1765, Britain enacts the Quartering Act, and that ticks a lot of people off. And that's why we make our Bill of Rights and our Constitution, that's why it's in there.
Okay.
And that's why it's the third, why they put it third. It's important.
We learn from something that went wrong.
Yeah.
How about that?
So 1830. Yeah, sometimes. 1832, Mormon leader Joseph Smith is beaten, tarred, and feathered Hiram, Ohio. Ohio. Really?
Yeah.
You're tarring and feathering a guy?
Yeah.
In 1832.
Hmm.
All right.
Yep.
Seems like it'd be very unpleasant.
Yes.
All right. Then mix in the beating on top of it. 1837. Canada gives its black citizens the right to vote.
Wow.
1837. Way to go, Canada.
Yeah. Good job.
They're just so nice.
My next question would be how many...
That's
are
true.
Living there at the time,
that's
too,
true.
Right? I mean, but yes, I mean, certainly progress.
I bet it goes up between 1837 and 1860.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
1868, Metropolitan Life Insurance Company forms, MetLife.
Yeah.
All right. 1958. Elvis Presley is inducted into the U.S. Army.
I saw that one. Yeah.
And you are both probably way too young to know the whole takeoff, Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh, well, I know the musical.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
Bye Bye Birdie.
Yeah, that's because it's Elvis basically going into the military.
Yeah.
But kids, what's the matter with kids today? I love that. 1972, Francis Ford Coppola's The Godfather opens. Now, it wasn't an Oregon film.
No.
But I am going to lose half of our audience right now.
Uh-oh. where are you going? Where are you taking us, Mac?
I find The Godfather incredibly boring.
Ooh.
I've never enjoyed it.
Well, I'll just say it's incredibly violent.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's terrifying. Mm-hmm.
It's moments of extreme violence with lots of just...
mediocre storyline.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
I'll agree with you.
How do we feel about
Julie,
it?
Julie, we're looking at you.
You know, I mean, I enjoyed it the first few times, but it's not one I go back to often. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mark would disagree. I'm going to have to.
See,
there you go. It's like one of his favorite movies ever.
Oh, I know. It always makes like the top five or often just the best movie ever made.
And he's the one that quotes the lines too. And I'm like, no, it doesn't do anything for me. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I don't get it. So, anyway.
Okay. All right.
1989, the Exxon Valdez crashes, causing one of the worst oil spills in history.
Yeah. Awful. I do. Yeah.
But our history highlight of the day, I think had the most impact on history. 1882, German scientist Robert Koch discovers and describes the tubercle bacillus, which causes tuberculosis and establishes germ therapy, germ theory. So we know about germs now. We know this is what causes diseases.
Right.
Way to go.
Well, and the identification of tuberculosis was huge, too, right?
So, huge impact.
Yeah.
And now we know we should wash our hands, especially before surgery.
Yeah. So. We've got a show for that.
That's right. 1882.
You did miss one, and it is a sad one, but on this day, and it, again, just...
Maybe I just didn't want to be sad today.
Just barely made my history, because it is 1998.
Oh, this makes me laugh already.
Yes. Well, it won't, though, at Jonesboro, Arkansas, saw the shooting in a grade school, killed five kids, but it was really sort of the first one... of then many, right? So this is the one that happened on a playground. A 13-year-old and 11-year-old shot their classmates and teachers did kill five people, including several of the students. Just 2 months later, Kip Kinkle did the same thing in Springfield High School here in Oregon. And then 1 year later was Columbine.
Okay.
So, but that first one being at a grade school, right? And certainly...
13 and 11.
Yeah, and it hasn't stopped either, right? But that was pretty significant in a very tragic way.
I did see that, and I just chose not to be sad.
I know. But it's, you know, every day I drop off my children, I think about it every day. Like, it's pretty...
Yeah, and I do think of the difference when I went to school versus when my kids went to school versus your kids today.
Right.
And, oh, my gosh, you could just walk through the school. Nobody cared. You forget something, you call your parents, and they just walk right into your classroom practically without ever stopping in an office. And we've lost something.
Yep. So, well, we have. There's no lovely transition other than we have a lovely teacher here who is also a farmer. We have Julie Hackett with Laughing Rabbit Farm. She's also a teacher at the North Coast Nature School. Thank you for joining us.
I'm so glad to be here.
Happy spring break to you.
Yay.
That is the worst introduction ever.
But she is so wonderful. And we're going to learn about her farm and her teaching. And let's start with, first of all, where did you grow up?
Yeah.
And what were you interested in?
So I grew up in Central California, San Ramon, East Bay, and then Monterey for high school. And, urban environment, just your classic kind of childhood. I grew up just loving swimming in the pool and doing all the things, riding my bike with my friends. I couldn't really describe what I wanted to do with my life, though, except I loved writing poetry. And so I did an English degree And I'd spent a year in Ireland with that as well. So that was sort of my first travel abroad and seeing what does the world look like outside of America. It was wonderful. I think everybody should spend some quality time.
So you like poetry, you get an English degree and you go to Ireland. Mm-hmm. Is there a link there at all?
Well,
specific Irish writers?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I loved a lot of the Irish writers. There was something about the Irish Revolution and the way that poetry played a role in social transformation and in bringing the country together as like under an Irish identity that really fascinated me.
So without giving us a master's thesis, explain that statement. I'm very interested and fascinated by this.
So the Irish were under English rule for 700 years, I believe. I mean, don't quote me on that, but... they had kind of lost a sense of nationhood or who an Irish person is. And so the writers and poets of that era really rebuilt the folk history and the identity of what an Irish person is. And, you know, it was a lot of diverse provinces. And so, you know, created a sort of a national cohesion through writing. And I just was really moved by the power of that. And also I have Irish heritage. So I wanted to go to a country also that I didn't need to learn a whole nother language for, although, you know, go to an Irish pub in a rural area and you may wonder whether they're speaking English.
Right?
Yes.
It's a thick accent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what time or what year or where were you in school at that time when you went there?
It was my third year in university. So that was 99.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you're still studying English. So you came back and then... where were you going to make money?
I had no idea still. Exactly. That was still the question. And again, I just couldn't really see myself in sort of a academic or, you know, intellectual setting. And I had a deep craving to learn how to do stuff. I didn't know how to sew a button. I was a very like non-practical, you know, skills person. And so I just got passionate, you know, in the gap year after university, I started taking sewing classes and permaculture and gardening, and I fell in love with making things and doing stuff. So I began a journey of learning how to grow food and did an internship on a farm to see if I would perhaps enjoy a rural lifestyle. And I loved it and I wanted more. And I met my husband at that time as well. And my first thing that I really I wanted to have a milk cow. I wanted to milk a cow. I wanted to, he could, you know, farm with horses as well. He had some really great skills with horses. And so we went off on this grand adventure to homestead and learn all of those like practical skills and arts. So I went from a very like rural or urban, you know, average lifestyle to this very, you know, homesteading, farming lifestyle.
And so is that what brought you here or were you still in California at the time?
Oh, so I did. I left California. One of the internships was up in Canada. Okay. So I, you know, started out in Ontario and then looking for land, looking for a place to live. We moved around a few times, but we found a place in New Brunswick and lived in New Brunswick for 6 years and farmed out there. So, you know, extreme seasonal climate and milk cow and horses and pigs and chickens in the big garden and all of that. And then eventually we did grow a little bit desirous of more family and community in our lives. So we moved west again. So we lived in BC for a few years. And eventually I wanted to come back into Oregon to be with family. So that's family drew me back down here.
And so do you still have a milk cow?
I do not.
I was going to say, I didn't.
And I don't have rabbits either. I know, that's a heartbreak.
That's the deep tease.
What is she doing here?
I know. The Laughing Rabbit Farm.
Yeah, we grow rabbit food.
But you keep those rabbits out.
We do. They'd be laughing if they found us. That's what we say.
So that was a big deal because all the kids did get to go on a field trip to Teacher Julie's farm, but they definitely expected there to be bunnies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We will eventually have a mascot. But, you know, after having a milk cow and, you know, horses and pigs and chickens and all of that for so long, I'm on a sabbatical from livestock. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Just food.
Yeah.
So when you're either interning or when you and your husband get this first farm that you're going to homestead, you're not starting from scratch. I mean, you're not like a pioneer chopping trees down and developing a piece of land. It's probably already a little developed, or is
we
it not?
We kind of did that other wow. thing. It was a bit extreme, but I was hungry for those skills. Mm. And also my husband is so handy and has a lot of those skills. So we went for the blank piece of land. We wow. moved a trailer onto it. There was a hand pump well that was dug in probably the 1800s. There was a mountain of rocks in the back forest that were, you know, cleared from some of the original settlers in the area. And we just had a big field, built a little barn for our animals out of the trees in the forest. And started from there, you know, dug up the soil, planted a garden.
Had it ever been farmed, even if it had been totally reclaimed? Had it ever?
It had.
It was. Would make me think,
yes. Yeah. No, it had been, you know, part of the original settlement. And, you know, I mean, gosh, the French-Canadian history up there is really fascinating. So it was, you know, a lot of the folks there had been there for hundreds of years. Their families went way back. And so it had been settled, but it was just a hayfield for the last 20 or so years.
It's like time traveling.
And yeah. So then you're just feeding yourself.
Yes. We were very much subsistence farming.
Okay.
And a lot of, you know, trade within the community to fill the gaps of, you know, of what we couldn't do. But
right. The things that you didn't have. And then you moved to BC. Mm-hmm. And so what was the goal there? Was that to just to feed yourself, or did you start branching out into commercial farming?
Yeah, we started branching out to commercial farming again. You know, I was also building community gardens there. We were just missing, you know, social and, you know, community interaction.
People
and family was closer. So we did a lot of more smaller scale community gardens because there's not really large scale agriculture. That was, you know, part of the glacial scrape. So there's pockets of soil there, really.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then you come here. So tell mm-hmm. us about Laughing Rabbit Farm and what you offer.
Yeah, Laughing Rabbit Farm is a small farm. We're down Lewis and Clark Road, a few miles. We get, you know, a beautiful piece of the Heckard Creek. So we have a perennial creek on the property with a ravine, but the land that we can actually farm is quite small. So we have what I consider to be more gardens, but we grow, we have a couple of greenhouses and we grow some seasonal produce that we bring to the markets in the summer. So we have some delicious greens, the rabbit food. We have arugula and salad greens and little edible flowers. But I, in the years, you know, farming, I also really fell in love with medicine plants. So I took a herbalism class during the pandemic. Part of it, we worked on an herb farm, a couple of herb farms on the way through various places. And I also started working in forest schools, so forest education and outdoor education for kids. So I sort of wrapped together this love for growing medicine plants as well as having a place that's a gathering place for community. And so Laughing Rabbit Farm has over 75 medicinal herbs and growing. I grow new ones every year. And we're building a little herb shed, an apothecary of sorts, to be able to host classes out there as well.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
So where did the name come from?
We were just trying to find a name, and it was whimsical. I don't know. We were tossing around different names, and we'd been on a farm called the Whistling Duck. And I was like, you know, I always thought that was a fun name, Whistling Duck. And so I don't know. I think John thought of it. How about Laughing Rabbit? And it just stuck. We thought it was funny and memorable and whimsical.
I'd rather hang out with a laughing rabbit than a whistling duck.
Yeah.
So I am curious because you said, you know, you took English because you liked poetry, but you didn't really know what you were going to do with it. And now you have what is obviously a huge passion.
Mm-hmm.
And play the what if game a little bit. Had you had this when you were 15, 16, and 17, how would your life be different? I mean, would you have gone right into this? Would you have found a farm right away? I mean,
who knows? Who knows? I mean, the what if game, I think a lot of my passion for outdoor education is to give kids an opportunity to, you know, be comfortable outside and play in all of the weather. You know, my time in New Brunswick when we were homesteading, it really reset my nervous system and foundation, I think, for my adult life. I know that anytime I am out of sorts, I can just go out into, you know, listen to the wind and the birds and watch the light change, and it can ground me and settle me. So I think that was a big passion for getting into, you know, outdoor education for kids. And if I had that more as a child, I mean, I think it was really my Nana who used to always take me on nature walks. She was the one who would pull me out into the forest and we would just wander and gather little bouquets of, you know, wild grasses and feathers and whatnot. And that was, you know, some of the more special memories of my childhood. So I just want, you know, the little people to have that.
So this is the North Coast Nature School, and it is a preschool, and my youngest does attend there, and it's entirely outdoors. Mm-hmm. So like she's saying, you know, they're also called forest schools, mm-hmm. nature schools, but this is North Coast Nature School. And truly, and people sort of, you know, I get the range of reactions like, oh, you're one of those mom. To, isn't she freezing?
Yeah.
Isn't she cold all the time? I mean, because it's the whole day.
Yeah.
But one, there are clothes and gear that you can buy, and you can buy layers of them. And two, there is also a covered area. Mm-hmm. And I like to point that out because it has a clear roof.
Mm-hmm.
So because my daughter did try a different one that didn't really have that mm-hmm. Covered space. So it's very bright all the time, but it's magical.
It is.
I mean, I see the pictures and I have that same whimsy that you do about these kids that, how wonderful that there are no toys mm-hmm. at this school. None.
Sticks. The stick is in the Toy Hall of Fame. One of the number ones. The stick is the best toy.
She can do math. She can, you know, knows her alphabet, mm-hmm. spells her name and all of her, I mean, all these things. And you know, I try to hold myself back, but I can't because I love to brag about it because kids will learn these mm-hmm. things
so
even better.
So describe a typical day.
So,
for her daughter.
Yeah. I mean, we do hold rhythms because the little ones want, you know, a predictable rhythm of the day. So we have a morning circle and a snack time. But the kids have a really, you know, dedicated big space of free play. And that's where they can, you know, get out all their wiggles and the big gross motor and build stuff and do social navigation. You know, oh, I want that, you know. So how do they figure that out? And we really rely on the kids to learn those skills. They come to us for big problems and they understand how they can solve little problems. So a lot of that problem solving is, you know, is a key to critical thinking and, you know, just navigating a lot of the skills of life. But we do patterns in nature. So, you know, a lot of that is the foundation for math and language, learning to identify plants, you know, that visual acuity is a huge part of language acquisition and writing. And they do also a lot of crafts. So then in the afternoon, we'll bring them back under the little hoop house cover and do some really fun crafts in there. We've been working with felt, wet felting, and also there's some beautiful watercolors that the kids were able to take home for Christmas.
So did you bring, they've always done storytelling, but they do a mm-hmm. lot of storytelling now.
Yeah.
Did you help bring that?
I did. Yes. I love the art of storytelling. It was actually Kaya who asked, like, why are you teaching us to tell stories?
Yeah.
And it was a great question. I had to kind of think of what a good response to that was. But this act of sort of formulating a story in your mind is a huge part of that, you know, comprehension of yourself in a community and in relation to other people and what you like and how you respond to things.
So. And so what the kids will do is they'll narrate a story mm-hmm. and the teachers will write it down. And so you'll get this long, mm-hmm. I mean, they're not short either. You'll get this long story. And some of them are just
off the wall crazy.
But they have pieces of our life in mm-hmm. there too, right? So mm-hmm. Dad snoring makes the story, but it's,
yes.
you know,
yeah,
in exactly. the woods with a bear
yes.
and all those funny
it
things.
It was the bear, it really wasn't.
Right, hard. Yes.
So what's the, you know, teachers always, we always talk about in terms of education and teachers, class size. So what's mm-hmm. what is your sweet spot for class size?
Eight for a couple of us is about, you know, honestly, it's like getting through some of the pieces that they need more help with, navigating the layers of clothing in and out of the bathroom and hand washing and snack. When they're free playing, you know, one of the responses I often hear from people is, well, won't the kids just all run away if you don't have a classroom or walls or, you know, something like that? They don't. They want to stick with the, you know, with their people, with the classroom is still sort of a defined space. So when they're free playing, it sometimes feels like eight is easy, you know, but then it's when we're getting them through all of the pieces where they need our support.
See, this is why I could never be a teacher, because eight is a good number.
Right, for two people.
I cannot picture 20, mm-hmm. 25.
I know. I know.
For all day.
And those kids do. They get a lot of our time, and I wish all kids did receive that. Yeah.
But it's great, too, for Oregon. I mean, my other daughter didn't have quite this experience, but she did half of her preschool outside, mm-hmm. and it was rain or shine. And it was really noticeable because she was not an outdoor girl, and she is now.
Yeah.
So it really, you know, took away some of those fears of mm-hmm. we don't go out in the rain mm-hmm. or we don't get muddy yep. or do those things unless we're just planning for it. Whereas yep. now, you know, if they splash in a puddle and get their entire outfit dirty, I still cringe. But, you know, that's a learned skill that's okay. And
that's okay.
And we do live here. And this is the weather that we have.
We actually, when it got to like 60, you know, 63 and sunny, the kids were wilting.
Oh, too hot. Taking it all off. Uh-huh. So what else do you do aside from this lovely school and farming? What mm-hmm. else keeps you here and keeps you active?
Oh, you know, I really love this community. I'm settling in. We've only been here 3.5 years, but there's a really vibrant community of small businesses that I love supporting. And I feel like there's just a great, you know, the people here want to have a fun, vibrant, you know, community here. And I love belonging here. So I take ceramics classes at Cambium Gallery. That's one of my loves that I do that's outside of, you know, I've turned all of my hobbies into a business. So
so not yet.
Yes. So no, not at all. It's very clearly just an enjoyable hobby that I do. So yeah.
And back up a little bit. How did you find Astoria?
Oh, I mean, it was one of our top 10. When we came back and started moving back to Oregon, we had a little camper van, traveled around, and Astoria was that perfect combination of like a smaller city. We love the ocean. Lots of rain. We lived in places that ran out of water on farms in California. So.
Oh, wow.
I love the rain. It's beautiful.
Well, there you go.
So you didn't quite answer the question, though. How did you find Astoria?
How did we find it?
Were you driving up and down the coast? Or was there property that you just found online? And we're like, where's Astoria?
Yeah, I mean, the Oregon coast was a draw for sure. And this is, you know, one of the larger communities on the coast. My sister lives in Portland, so I wanted to be close to my nephews and be close to my sister. So something, you know, we were looking for something in that, you know, drivable ring around Portland. And rather than the mountain, we love the coast.
Well, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, we're so excited that you're here and bringing these tools to our community. Where can people find your products with the farm?
Yeah, absolutely. We are currently on the North Coast Food Web, which is a wonderful online year-round marketplace. If you can make it work, it's a great way to buy local products. And then starting in May, we'll be at the Sunday Market in Astoria downtown. And then we are also going to be traveling to Manzanita on Friday nights for the farmers market. And then in Klatskanai, there's a lovely little food hub there that carries our products.
Okay. And you mentioned some classes, so people mm-hmm. could check out your website because
yes.
that's where you'll announce it.
You'll probably see, I don't even know how to make them like not visible. I'm editing my website. Oh. You can see it live in action. I'm posting some new classes online as well. Yeah. So laughingrabbitfarm.com.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. All right.
And you didn't even ask. Who's your favorite student?
Oh, they're all adorable.
Yes.
I won't do that. You know, I just love somebody who's found their passion and shares that passion yeah. so over the top with other people. And that's an amazing, wonderful thing. So excited that you're here and excited that you're taking care of Lana's family.
Yeah. Thank you.
Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for an adventure in history. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.